So we're in Toaster and with my brother Frank Borrell, who I believe will be 91 in a few days' time. And he, I hope, is going to tell us about some of his experiences during the war, when he was a flight mechanic with the RAF in India, Burma and Singapore. He is going to, he's just going to talk. I might interrupt with questions. We'll have to see how it goes. So, Frank, you left school at the age of 14 and you went to the RAF 3 years later. What did you do when you started after school, and why did you leave to join up to the RAF?
It was set of circumstance. The job I was in was no future, and my father was fortunate in bringing some RAF literature home, and we applied, and I got taken on. I went to Kingsway, I went to West Drayton for induction, I went to Cranwell for my initial training, square bashing, and I went to Headlesford for my technical training. And we ended up at Uphaven on Salisbury Plain at the Central Flying School, where I was working on maintenance all the time, until in end of 1940 and into 41, I got my notice of posting overseas, and I went overseas on the Duchess of York.
That's good. I would just like to ask you about something about your time at West Drayton. I mean, what were you training to be?
At that time, I wasn't training to be anything so much as West Drayton was merely the induction station for the whole of the RAF. Practically everybody else, including the officers, went through West Drayton. It was one of those sorts of places.
Right. And then what did you do at Cranwell?
Cranwell, we did our initial training, i.e. square bashing, to teach us how to march and walk and salute officers and handle rifles. We did 5-round shooting there, I can remember. But that was all. We were only there for 6 weeks to do 6 weeks initial training.
Yes. Did you come... I think you came across an interesting aircraft while you were there.
Oh, yes. While we were there, they liked to put our... Because we were Air Force, they liked... because we were airmen, they liked to put our hands on aeroplanes. And I helped to push, as part of my training, an old bomber called a Hayford.
Which is a biplane.
Which is a biplane. And crew of three, as far as I can remember. But whether it was airworthy or not, I couldn't tell you. We really pushed it about to show how to not show us where not to touch, because it's all canvas and canvas and stringers.
And what about Hennesford? Did you have any hands-on experience there of aircraft?
Later on in the course at Hennesford, we had a Bristol Bulldog.
That's a venerable aircraft.
A venerable aircraft, that's right. And we learned on there to learn to go patching on the canvas. The flight mechanic engines used to work on the engine, and we worked on the body and all those sorts of things with regard to learning how to be an airman or a flight mechanic airframes, which is what I became.
What sort of technical training did you have?
Technical training was hands-on engineering, not heavy engineering, learning how to file a piece of metal smooth and shiny with a file only, no emery cloth or anything like that, and it had to be flat and square, and they used to check it with a micrometer to make sure it was right, so that we'd done it all as a test piece at the end of the course.
I see. And then at Upavon, I think that was a flying school.
It was the central flying school, the RAF.
So what were you doing there? What aircraft were you working on?
We were working on Airspeed Oxford, Avro Tutors. There was a Master, and various other airplanes we saw and dealt with there. All training aircraft, all pure training.
And you were engaged in maintenance?
Oh, maintenance.
Right. And then, during that period, sometime around then anyway, the war broke out. So, what did you do on the day war broke out?
The day war broke out, I was at Hennesford, and there was a general parade because I think there was a spy scare somewhere. And being a young man with a lot of other young men larking about, I fell down a trench, and my first fortnight of September, beginning of the war, I spent in hospital with a scraped off face.
So you, in a sense, were the war's first casualty, but not...
One could easily... It was a first casualty as far as I was concerned.
But not from enemy action.
Oh, no, through my own larking about, I can tell you.
But now, you were training there on what sort of equipment, apart from these training aircraft?
It was all hands-on work. You learned how to drill properly. You learned how to file properly. You learned how to use tools that relate to engineering, like surface tables and that sort of thing, as well as getting involved with repairing canvas aeroplanes. The wooden bits came in as well, but the most important thing was repairing the canvas, presumably against bullet holes or whatever, to... with the use of canvas and dope.
Yeah, so, but you were also engaged with American equipment shortly after.
While I was at Upavon, I got posted to, as a temporary posting, to Collern, where I was learning American equipment. And we were working on, Mohawks and Tomahawks and that sort of thing, that's right.
Yeah. So you were actually building these aircraft as well?
We were assembling them out of a packing case.
All right.
The packing case was taken apart, we had all the bits, we had to put all the bolts in.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing too. We were assembling finished airplanes as they'd come from America.
And presumably then you could maintain them afterwards if you had...
This was the theory.
Yeah, understood. So that brings you to the end of 1940, roughly. Then what happens?
In 41...
March
41, I got posted overseas. We went from Upavon to West Kirby. That was the induction place for the overseas, and we went on the Duchess of York from Liverpool to Singapore.
That's a long trip.
6 weeks or thereabouts, and one point that we can remember is when we were going down through the South Atlantic. The swell was quite big, no storm, a lot of wind, and my mates and I, most of the table that we were on, were engulfed in seasickness, and we've never fed so well in all our lives as we did that 4 or 5 days that the weather was bad.
So that took you to Singapore. So what was your job there?
I was posted to 36 Squadron at Salita, who were flying Vickers Wildebeest. That is a beast of an aeroplane, complete with spats. It wouldn't do 100 miles an hour flying straight down. It was very slow. And the Japanese, when they came here, they picked them all off one after the other without any trouble at all. But they went flying. But I was only there a short while because somebody had realised they'd made a mistake with my posting. So I got posted from there to 67th Squadron, who had got... Brewster Buffaloes, not Western. Brewster Buffaloes. And we were posted from Salita to a place called Kallang, which was Singapore Airport and the main airport for the whole of the area. And so we had a hangar, and the British Airways had the other hangar.
So this was about 6 months before the war began.
Oh, yes, so yes.
In the Far
yes.
East, that is.
That's
what
right.
What sort of life was it on those sorts of stations then?
It was all peacetime. Lights, food, hours of work. Hours of work were 7 in the morning until midday, and then 2 hours in the evening, after which there would be dinner, for which we, even as ordinary airmen, were expected to dress up with a collar and tie and proper uniforms before you were even let into the dining room of the cookhouse. It was slightly different at Kallang. It was much, much more like an RAF station, but it was all peacetime. And it wasn't until the Japanese turned up there and started bombing that the people at Singapore realised that it would become a war zone and it wasn't peacetime anymore. It had ceased.
Yes,
but we had street lights and everything. And we found, digressing, we found the biggest shock I think we had when we went to Cape Town, where we spent a week tied up in the dock and we went round the place.
That was in your journey out?
On the journey out, and where they got streetlights. Of course, we'd come from blackout to that, so it was quite a surprise.
I'm sure. Now you moved on to Burma.
In October of 41, the squadron were posted to Mingledon at Rangoon. I was on the advance party, and in the normal service fashion, the advance party arrived there a week after the main party. But, sorry about that. But we did have 3 days in Penang, which they didn't get. But the war started while we were at Mingledon. And our first air raid was on the 23rd of December. The town of Rangoon got bombed. We had a bit of strafing on the field. I'd got a slit trench, so I was all right. But on the 25th of December, we had another raid where the Japanese come across in the normal fashion and dropped all their bombs in one place at one time. And the most unfortunate bit about it was the fact one bomb fell into the middle of the cookhouse. And it spoiled our Christmas dinner.
Tell me, were these sorts of raids, were there any casualties?
Pardon?
Were there any casualties?
Not that I know, not that I can remember.
No.
Don't remember any of my mates ever getting a casualty or anything like that.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And then you also were involved in recovering captured aircraft, I believe.
The pilots were quite good, actually. The one that all sticks in my mind is a New Zealander called Kitchy Barge. Kitchy is a word little, and Barge was B-A-R-G-H-E or something like that, New Zealand word. And he shot down a Japanese fighter, but it came down whole without any damage, fell into the jungle, and they went to see it and thought it was a good idea that they should get it back and fly it. So they sent the army out to recover this airplane. Unfortunately, the army were a bit heavy-handed and chopped the wings off the airplane with a B-29 big with an axe. Needless to say, the pilots were a bit peeved because they'd ruined it completely.
So what happened to the aircraft that were now war aircraft flying out of your airbase?
We lost most of our airplanes to various things. A bit few on the ground, most of them to enemy thing, because the Japanese were always flying about and our people had to go up and chase them off or get shot down or what have you. And from there we were transferred onto Hurricanes as a beginning for refitment. And we were posted from, because our squadron was ineffective, we were posted up to a place called Magui in central Burma.
All right.
Two things to remember about it. One is it was all sand, and while we were there, there was an outbreak of plague in the surrounding area among the peasants. So we were all commanded to have a plague injection, which entailed 48 hours doing no work. So everybody was very pleased. Fortunately, unfortunately, I was working that day. So after seeing all the troubles that these were in, I got myself prepared.
That's the troubles that the injection caused.
The troubles the injections caused, because they don't give you 48 hours leave for just having an injection. You merely line up with the arm uncovered, get injection and go back to work. But plague is a bit nasty. And I got myself ready with Aspros and things like that, so that when I had my injection, I went back to my hut and took all these Aspros, and except for feeling a bit woozy for a couple of days, it really had no effect on me at all, whether they presumed the injection took, because I certainly didn't get plague either.
Now the Japanese are presumably coming up towards Burma. So what happens then?
We heard through the grapevine that the Japanese had broken through at a place called Prome, P-R-O-M-E. And because of this, we were immediately put on evacuation. Leave your kit behind, take your small kit, and they flew in Dakotas to fly us out to Akiab, where we spent 3 days idling about until hoping our kit was going to arrive, which it never did, and we were put on a boat and sent to Calcutta.
All right. So that would be in the autumn of 1942.
That's right. We were put on a train, our squadron, everybody was put on the train, and we went out to a place called Bareilly, which is about 50 miles from Lucknow in India.
So, now we've had a nice cup of tea, for which many thanks, we might as well resume. We were somewhere in the neighbourhood of Calcutta, if I remember properly.
From Bareilly, we went back to the squadron again, was posted back to Calcutta. I was on maintenance, so I was out in the country at a different place. But the two flying flights went to a road across an open space like Richmond Park called the Maidan. And they were flying it off one of the main roads from there, the two airplanes, as a part of the defence of Calcutta.
What aircraft were these?
We were flying Hurricanes at that time. And we'd all, obviously, all had to learn to go from Brewster Buffaloes, which are American equipment, to Hurricanes. But we got by and we did the job.
And then you found yourself having to recover Hurricanes, which...
Oh, yes. While we were there, I was part of a party that had to go down onto the delta of the Hooghly River, which runs right through Calcutta. to recover a hurricane that has been caught. I think two airplanes have crashed together. But the one that we went to recover was practically undamaged, and it was taken to a place called Cumbergram, which is a very major railway workshop, and we repaired it. And it was carried away and went flying and kept on flying all the time. After 18 months, so something like that, the squadron was again posted, with the squadron, to Chittagong, where we're still flying Hurricanes. And
which squadron was that?
67.
Yes, I think weren't you in 82 as well?
No, we do that in a minute.
I'm sorry, that's my...
That's all right. This is still 67 Squadron, and they were still building the aerodrome when we got there, but we were able to fly and maintain the airplanes and all the rest of it. While I was at Chittagong, I was posted back to American equipment, because I was posted to 82 Squadron, which had got Volte Vengeance. And they were at a place called Feni, F-E-N-I. I spell it because it's a funny sounding name. But we had time there, and eventually that squadron got posted down to Cox's Bazaar, where we were flying with an Indian squadron, also Volte Vengeances, because the Japanese were trying to get up through the Arakan, and the army didn't want that to happen, so we got involved.
So how far away were the Japanese at that time?
I would think we were something like 50, 60 miles from the front where the fighting was taking place.
Right.
But we were well away, but it was quite nice there. The biggest problem is if you went swimming in the sea, because we were right by the sea, you'd burn your feet on the sand because the sand was so hot because the sun was bright. Got an interjection.
Yes, indeed. But how did you eat and so on? I mean, was it ordinary mess food?
Ordinary mess food.
Or was it Indian food with a chai wala?
No. Ah, that's another man. Yes, well. We had normal service rations, and there was a cookhouse and barrack rooms. But while we were at Cox's Bazaar, one flight of the squadron, and I was included as a maintenance wala, we were sent to the Imphal front. Can't remember the aerodrome, where the Japanese were also trying to break through. While I was there, I'd been working on one of these Volte Vengeance, and the pilot decided to do a test ride, and I catched a lift with him, and he went up to enormous heights and pointed the aircraft straight down. I could see the runway now as I'm talking, and we watched
that
runway.
That's directly below you?
Yes, and he was directly in front of us, straight down, not sideways, sloping, straight down. And when he pulled out, he was below the crowns of the palm trees. Somewhere I've got a photograph of myself on a Vengeance wing where the wing tip had been knocked off because the pilot was too close to the trees.
But on the whole, you were on the ground.
Oh, yes, yes. We weren't flying at all. If you had a lift flight, it was by courtesy of the pilot, no more or less. He did no more than that. It was they provided you with a helmet and something to speak to the man with, but that was the limit, and it was a privilege to be able to fly there, not sat in the back where the air gun normally sits. And it was lovely. Looked over his shoulder, there was the aerodrome miles below us, straight in front, and he never wavered. And our pilots were quite clever, because at the end of the runway the flights had set up an oil drum and painted the top white, And they didn't hit it. They didn't want to hit it because it was the target, but they could strike the ground very close to it with dummy bombs as practice. And they were always very close, so presumably upset the Japs as well.
I would expect so. Anyway, you moved on to larger aircraft after that, I believe.
While I was at 82, I got posted again to, I think, 366 Squadron at Selbani, which is a town about 50 miles south of Calcutta. And they were flying Liberators. And I was on the maintenance again, and they were bombing Saigon and all these places like that, and we used to watch them out and watch them back. And while I was there, my brother came out, Teddy. He couldn't find me. He went to the guard room. The guard room said, yes, I've got his leave pass, because I was going on leave over the Christmas. And after about a week of searching around the whole of the station, because they thought I'd gone on leave without this pass, he found me in hospital having another dose of malaria. But all's well, I met him, and that was the most important thing.
How much malaria did you have? I mean, how many times do you think?
As far as I can remember, I think I had 4 or 5 doses of it. Generally, it needed, at that time, it called for a fortnight in hospital, being with drugs. And you went back to work. No rest from the hospital. You went straight back to work, and that was the end of it.
All right. Now, what were you doing to the Liberators? I mean, maintaining the airframe, but were they damaged, these Liberators?
Not that I can remember. There wasn't a great deal of opposition to them when they were out there doing their bombing. I think they took the Japanese by surprise, actually. But we had no real damage to the airplanes at all. We were just doing ordinary maintenance, making sure that they passed their tests and they were fit to fly. Yeah. And we used to go flying with them occasionally, not on raids, but go on a test flight with them and out over the sea and across the beaches. And it was very pleasant indeed. I could stand between the pilots, stand without harness between the pilot's seat and watch what was going on, which was quite interesting.
I'm sure. It must have been. So now we've moved from 1943 through 1944, I think.
That's right. In 1944.
And now things began to turn, but you stayed in India looking after Liberators.
That's right. That's right. The squadron I was with were still operating, even though the operations got less. And towards the end of 44, Christmas time was spent on the station, I got my posting for home. I'd been out overseas 4 years, and they thought there was enough, and I did 4 years almost to the day, because we got put on a train in Calcutta, we got put on another train, and we ended up in Bombay. And in March 44, I was put on a boat. And that was almost 4 years to the day from the time that I got put on a boat at Liverpool to go out, which was very fortunate. And we sailed back to Liverpool again.
Arriving after the end of the German war?
That took place while we were floating about at... it took place after then, because that was all...
That was in May, yes, that's right.
Yeah, May, because we got ourselves engaged on that day and went to a dance in the local sports hall. And one of the soldiers, because the floor wasn't very slippery, went down to the beach and got a handful of soft sand and threw it out across the floor. So we were dancing and grating like the... Who's the chap shoot?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah. Like the sand dancers. And that's what we're doing the night we got gays. That was a night of VE Day.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And then you were demobilised shortly afterwards.
We went to when we came back from overseas, I was posted to Henlo. There we were maintaining all sorts of airplanes. I got worked on quite a lot of different types of airplane. And it was while we were there that the Japanese war ceased, which was in the August. And later on, having a fairly low number, I think I was demobbed. I got married that year. And no more than 3 months afterwards, certainly by Christmas of that year, I was out.
Brilliant.
I always like to think that I was out on the march, but I was out before the march. I'm sure I was. Harvey would know better than I would. But and I was out, and I'd done my service. I was only in LAC all the time. No bother. But as far as I was concerned, the government allowed me to travel the world at their expense.
So, and you were a good age, between the ages of 20, 25-ish almost.
That's right.
It was, or 24. It must have been a good time with all the chaps.
As far as I was concerned, I had a good war.
Yeah.
We weren't involved in, except the bombing in Rangoon. On bombings when you're on leave coming to London. Beyond that, no, none at all. I had a good time.
Well, what would your what sort of regret might you have, do you think?
The real regret that I've got and I carry around now, can't do anything about it, is that I was young, I was with my mates, we're all out for a good laugh, but I should have used my eyes more and looked at more things in foreign climes that you can only see on the television now.
Yes, yes, these are, Burma and India are expensive places to go to.
Yes, they are, they are. They
and
are.
You went free.
That's right, I went
at
free.
At a time, at a different That's time. Right. Yes, yes. But one has to remember that you were a grand age and you had a grand time and you lived your life to the full by
yes,
the sound
yes.
of it.
Yes, oh,
okay,
dear.
Well, that's lovely, Frank. I'm very grateful to you for recording that and thank you very much indeed.
It's it.